Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, August 14th. A Wednesday, I sort of like Wednesdays. They're pretty busy for me, but I like them anyway. So there you go. I like every day. Just happy to be alive, right? I'm joined this morning by Katie once again. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Thank you.
Get a little closer to the mic.
Oh, yes. Thanks for having me back. Sorry about
that, guys. It's okay. No problem. So you were kind of under the weather. You feeling better now?
I was. Yeah, I had a kidney infection, but I feel way better now.
Really?
Yes.
How do people get those? It's just like it happens or what?
It happens. It felt like it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Really?
Over the weekend. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, man. I mean, things happen and you don't know where they come from.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens, man. So, and we do have a guest. We'll bring her on in just a moment. We're going to talk about her movie. And wanted to cover a couple of things. Katie, remind us where you're originally from.
I'm originally from the south side of Chicago.
Oh, okay. And was that a nice place to grow up in?
My neighborhood's pretty nice, but the rest of it can be a little seedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at what point did you move away from there?
Oh, my goodness. I moved away from there almost 15 years ago.
Mm.
Yeah.
Chasing the dream in L.A.?
I went to New York first, and then I came to L.A.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And what did you do in New York?
I went to college.
Oh, wow. Which one?
NYU.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a smart one here.
Oh, no. Give me too much credit.
Well, I don't know. What did you major in?
I majored in drama and I minored in math.
Oh, math.
Yep.
How unusual.
Yep.
Are you into STEM, into science and math and technology?
I'm not really into science. Mm-hmm. I like physics, but that's because it's very math-based.
Right.
But I love math because I'm one of those people who hates like overanalyzing something, and I love how logical math is. It's beautiful to me, just like one clear answer.
Wow.
You know?
You see, that's a good answer, man, because math is, it's like either it is or it's not, right?
Yeah.
Everything is exact and precise.
Exactly.
You're right. So you like that.
I love that. And I also think that there's a musicality to math that is similar to comedy,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. And I love comedy
really?
As well. Yeah. Just
wow,
like
it's amazing to
beats.
Find that connection.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you interested in math early on in your life?
Yes.
So you did very well in school in math, right?
I did very well in school in math.
Right.
Math.
Right.
Plural. For emphasis.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good. Did you enjoy your college days there?
I really enjoyed my freshman year and my senior year. Sophomore and junior year was a little bit of a struggle, but I'm happy that I went through it because I think that it, you know, grew me up.
Struggle what? Socially or?
Socially, yeah.
Really?
I transferred to NYU from Sarah Lawrence,
right.
And I had a great pool of friends at Sarah Lawrence. And at NYU, I kind of struggled making good friends. And when I don't make good friends, I'm kind of like, all right, I'm going to be a loner, you know? So I spent a lot of good alone time, sophomore and junior year, but I'm very thankful for it.
So it doesn't make it bad. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's still okay.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing wrong with being alone, you know?
No.
People sometimes underestimate how important it is. I have been alone many years in my life, always had a friend or two or something, you know, family and so forth. But still, I've done a lot of things on my own and really enjoy it, you know, like travel. Sometimes I took a road trip in Oregon alone. I had a blast, you know,
oh, I love that.
Because I'll tell you what I liked. I like that I can do exactly what I want. I don't have to ask somebody else, do you feel like doing
exactly.
this or go where they want to go and I don't want
on
to.
On your schedule, complete freedom.
Exactly.
I love it.
And today with phones and everything, you're not alone anyway, you know.
No, I know.
You can be driving your friend or whatever's on the phone with you and so you're not alone, but that's pretty good. So you felt it made you grow
absolutely.
Up a little bit, understand yourself a little more,
yes.
accept yourself a little more.
Yes,
sounds good.
Love yourself.
And, yeah, right. And what are you doing now?
I am an actor, writer, producer, kind of you name it, I do it. I do a lot of different things.
Wow. So you like this stuff. You're the creative type.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
You can't sit in an office for 8 hours a day.
Nope.
I know. I've learned to recognize creative types, you know. Yeah. And yeah, it's hard to sit in an office 9 hours a day, you know.
No, yeah.
And sometimes I have to do it here, but it's not really office, you know. It's the radio show.
Sure.
I meet a lot of people and stuff, so it's cool, you know. But if you have to sit in front of the computer and you're alone for 9 hours, I could never handle that.
Or
you
sure,
know?
Or deal have with, a nightmare with, boss, you
right,
know.
Right, deal with numbers and things like that all the time, accounting and... No, I'm not into that. The funny thing is I used to be an accountant too, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I
so
tried
a
lot of
person
things.
Too.
Kinda. I mean, I love everything. If you come to my house, I have books on every possible topic there is.
Interesting.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a new math book that's coming out that seems kind of interesting. So like the history of math and everything, every concept. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So yeah. I'm waiting. That's going to be published, I think, in 2 weeks or something.
Awesome.
But yeah, so I read stuff like this. Physics, you talked about physics, science, psychology, anything. You know, just give me anything. But I got to be reading constantly or I feel empty, you know?
Sure.
So it's pretty weird. So before we get to our guest, I just wanted to bring this up, Katie.
Yes.
They have a headline here that Mike Tyson, we all know who he is, right?
Love Mike Tyson,
he says he burns through $40,000 of weed at his ranch every month. You know how much weed that is? I thought I burned through a lot. My God. But he's got a ranch, so I guess that's everybody that smokes
there.
Where's
his ranch? Does it say?
I think in California or something.
Oh,
it's got to be, right?
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I loved him in The Hangover. So funny.
Oh, The Hangover? I never saw him in that because
oh,
I never
goodness.
Saw the movie.
You got to watch it. So
yeah.
Good.
Wow. He's in California, I guess. He launched the Tyson Ranch. Which,
of course he did.
Yeah. Which sells 9 strains of cannabis flowers, potent extracts, and soon edibles. I mean, let me tell you, and listeners know this, I burned through a lot of weed, but this is ridiculous. You know, what is this?
That's hilarious.
So I thought I'd bring this up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, enough bullshit for today, folks. Katie, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're amazing, and you're an interesting person and everything. And we'll have a good show today.
Yes,
for
look
sure.
Look forward to it.
Yeah. So we're joined by film director Erica Davis Marsh. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And... So this is funny, though, I got to tell you, okay,
yes.
Because I've been screwing up a lot of, like, guests and hosts lately. Like, the other day, 2 hosts came at the same time,
oh,
and
no.
I forgot one. One was that I double scheduled, right? So it turned out for the best, no problem there. But and then I had, like, guests also come in at the same time, and I'm, like, going, what the hell am I doing? You know, something's happened to me. But I always write things down. Well, not always, okay, but usually I do, especially guests. Guests, every time I write it down. And I thought Wednesday was going to be no guests. And then last night I get from Catherine, the publicist,
sure.
The information on Erica. I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't schedule anything, you know, because it would have been another one of those, you know. But so we got your information in time. And I'm fascinated by you and by your film. So we'll talk a little about that. Your film is called CODA, right?
Yes.
But it's all caps. Is that what does that mean?
It stands for Child of Deaf Adults. It's an acronym.
Oh.
So it's about children who grow up with one or more parents who's deaf.
Oh, okay.
That's what it stands for, yeah.
I see. Because I thought... CODA also stands for Codependent Anonymous or something. Have you heard of that before?
Well, I might do that. It's also, you know, a music term, right? You know, return to the CODA, right? So it has a bunch of meanings, so
yeah.
take it what you will.
Yeah, right?
But in this case, we mean it for a child of deaf adults.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to the film, of course, but let's learn a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Diego. I actually grew up in Imperial Beach, which was the last beach before Mexico, so right on the border of Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of a cool place to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had a very diverse group of people.
How did your family end up living there?
I think they could just afford it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it seems like the last place you'd go to if it's the last beach before Mexico.
It was a really cool place. It was
really?
It was, yeah, it had this very 60s kind of beach vibe. It had a bunch of those old, like, beach, you know, surfer kind of dude guys. Yeah. Plus, it had the military base, the naval base was right up. So there was a lot of Navy families that were there.
Right.
And then there were people, you know, there were some people who had come over from Mexico. That so there were some Mexican families and things like that. It was a really kind of cool place to be.
Right. Okay. Have you been to San Diego?
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty nice, right?
It is really nice.
I don't know anybody that doesn't like San Diego.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a great place. Yeah.
It's
a nice
not
place.
Too big, you know, it's nice.
Weather's good.
Clean.
Traffic's not as bad as here.
Yep.
Exactly, you know, and it's a big part of it is it's a college town, right? I mean, you have Diego State and all that there, so that's pretty cool.
Two big colleges, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the other one?
UC, San Diego,
and State.
Yeah,
right.
It has both.
That's true, right? And they're both good schools.
Yeah, they're both great schools, yeah.
Wow. Did you go to school, to college?
I did, yeah.
Where did you go?
I got my bachelor's from UC Davis, and I got my master's from USC.
Oh, wow. See, I'm surrounded by smart women here. I love that. I love a smart room, I'm telling you. So, very cool. And how did you end up in... Oh, so what did you major in? What did you say?
Well, at UC Davis, I was dramatic arts, so theater. And then at USC, I was in the cinematic arts in the production program.
So you got similar backgrounds.
Yeah,
I mean, you went, you know, you went the same way, drama and theater and things like that.
Sure, yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. Were you interested in that early on in your life? Did you know early what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I was interested in a couple different things. I was always a dancer as a young person, and I really loved dance movies and things. But I also was very, funny enough, interested in science. I had an aeronautical engineering scholarship.
Wow!
So I almost went straight science.
Wow!
And then I was just really, I just felt like it wasn't quite the right, even though I loved it, it wasn't quite the right thing for me.
Right.
So I went full arts.
Yeah.
So
full arts.
What can you do?
Yeah, exactly. But no, but it's good that you know what you want. You know, you focus on what you want and you do it. You know, if you think aeronautical engineering one side, and the other side you have theater, the third you have this, you go, well, which one am I going to give attention to? But I think when you decide on one direction, it's like a map. You just go there, you know, and you do whatever it takes to get there.
And you can really specialize instead of spreading yourself too thin.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But so you decided to go after film and stuff. At what point did you have you made some more movies before CODA?
Yeah, I have. I mean, at USC, you have to make a bunch of little films and things. And I had done a couple small things right before. This is the biggest one, though, that's, you know, has the biggest cast. It's the longest. It has kind of the most ambitious arc that I've ever tried to do.
Right.
So everything else is something much more contained, you know, like two people in a room or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. This when one, you don't have budget and stuff, that's what you do, right?
Yeah, and also...
And you focus on the drama, maybe on the acting more.
Yeah, and just, it's a, you know, it's a little bit, it's not even just budget, it's also time, right?
Yeah.
We are producing things so fast sometimes, you would be like, okay, 2 weeks now you have to turn in your film. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You gotta pull it together real quick.
Yeah. So is this a short film or a feature?
This is a short film. It's 20 minutes long.
20 minutes.
So it's a long
20
short
minutes
one.
Is a long short,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool. So have you watched like short movies before? I mean,
oh,
I usually don't, really.
I've worked on countless of them.
Yeah, I guess that's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like usually the only way you can see them is like in festivals and stuff, right? Or like when they have like a short film, festival. I mean,
that's the best
even
way.
The theater.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's where they usually come out, and that's where kind of the best. Well, I mean, let's just, if it's a comedy thing, a lot of times they'll do really well on a YouTube or something like that.
Yeah.
So, but if it's more dramatic or something, then probably your film festival is probably where you're going to see the best ones and the ones that are kind of getting attention and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, and from what I understand, you know, when people make short films, it's more like to create yourself a portfolio to move towards features, right? So it doesn't have to be successful financially, and but it adds a lot to your experience, to your reel, to your, you know, portfolio, like I said, you know. So what was your motivation for making this movie?
In terms of like portfolio or in terms of why I wanted to make this story?
Yeah, why did you make this story?
Okay. Well, this, so a couple things. Like I said, it's a story about a dancer. I was a dancer.
Right. You love that. That's what you said.
Yeah, no. So yeah, that was an easy kind of thing. And when my sister actually, you know, married a deaf man, and that's what brought me into the deaf community in a small way. And I started learning sign language and things like that. And I kind of recognized that, or like kind of was inspired by how much dance and sign language communicated similarly in like a physical kind of way. Their emotions.
Right,
were,
without words.
Without words, with just, I mean, there are words in sign language, but it's a physical versus a vocal expression of,
right,
of the words,
right,
or the thoughts or whatever.
Right, vocal expression. Right.
Yeah, yeah. And so I had been just kind of thinking about that kind of a lot and sort of trying to figure out, it had been in my mind for a while. And then I was at school, and I was sort of having this sort of like experience, like Katie was, where I was just kind of, it was a transition for me because I was coming back to school after a couple years off, and I was just sort of lost a little bit. I wasn't sure what I was doing or if I was doing the right thing. And so that's kind of the experience that Alex, my main character, is kind of having. She's a little bit lost. She's trying to figure out what, you know, what's going on. And then in this particular case, her case is she meets this deaf drummer, and that kind of brings up all her sort of feelings about being the only hearing person in her deaf family, and she kind of has to deal with all those struggles.
Right.
And so I was kind of dealing with like, where do I fit in struggles, and also because of my deaf brother-in-law, you know, they have a son, and he's a CODA, and he was having some issues a little bit with, you know, where does he fit in? And it just kind of all coalesced together.
So socially, it's got to be very hard to be a deaf person, right?
They're very...
Because you're saying he's trying to find out where he is.
Well, that's my nephew who's CODA. He's hearing.
Right, right.
Yeah, but his, you know, but I think everybody feels if their parents are a little different than the mainstream, they feel sometimes a little bit, you know, like what's... How can I be like, you know, we like to be like everyone else, right? So we don't like to feel different.
Especially as children.
Yeah, especially
you know,
as children, you know, and he's kind of moving on to those, you know, middle school years, which, you know, those are the ones where you're really trying to struggle with that. I think the deaf community is pretty strong in terms of like their group, you know, I think deaf people really have a strong relationship to other deaf people. But I do feel like that there is some social... not stigma, but obviously not a lot of people speak sign language. It sort of is a thing that sticks out. There are accommodations that have to be made and things like that. And anytime you're asking for accommodations, you know, for any kind of accommodation, it becomes like a sticky kind of, it's not easy, right? It's not simple. So there's always those little things that start to build up in people, you know.
Right.
And they all deal with it slightly differently because they're just people. But
that's true. And what about people like sort of like, you know, like when you feel bad for somebody and stuff, do they probably don't like it when someone comes and looks at them as like, oh, poor guy, he can't
hear. Sure. They definitely, right? I mean, I don't want to speak too much for the deaf community not being deaf, but just from my experience, they definitely have deaf pride. That's kind of one of, you know, that is sort of a statement that they say. And they're and they also say things like, you know, we're just like everyone else. We just don't hear, you know, so that's just the only difference. We can do anything we can. And, you know, except for they do need this small accommodations, but obviously, you know, they're not dealing with any other, you know, disability of any sort, right? They're exactly the same as you or I, except for they just don't hear as well or don't hear at all.
Yeah. Wow. Do you know any deaf people?
I don't.
I know. I don't either. I don't know. But maybe we should.
There's a lot least, here in Los Angeles.
Really?
Yeah, there
I'm sure there are a lot everywhere,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no like certain distribution for big cities, I think.
No, for sure.
But
and also, let's be real. There's also a lot of people with hearing loss. I mean, a lot of them are older, but
sure.
they're still dealing with similar things. If you have an older parent or grandparent
oh, yeah.
or something, and they accommodate you, that's you can start to see the little bit of accommodation that you have to start making for
yeah.
somebody so that they can pay attention. And like be included in conversations and things like that.
Right.
And then just kind of up that a little bit. And then you kind of get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Whenever I'm on the phone with my parents, my dad especially is always like, are you in the hills? Because if he can't hear me, it's because I'm in the hills.
right. Right.
I'm like,
it's
no,
somebody else's fault.
I'm on Santa Monica Boulevard, not in the hills.
Yeah.
You know,
we definitely don't like to not. Uh-huh. It's never our fault.
yeah.
So when you say accommodating, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, okay, for instance, you know, if you're in a group, right, like a bar would be too dark to see the sign language easily. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a group setting, you would need to have the lights up a little bit more.
Right,
So their parties and things like that have a little bit more
light.
So
it's sort of like allowing someone to participate by accommodating them.
Sure. And if you're in, you know, they don't, you know, if we're in group situations, they don't hear the little cues to
right.
look at that person, right? So you have to gather their attention, you know, and those kinds of things.
Right.
It's best if, you know, there's in situations, if there's nobody else who's like can help or whatever, that there's an interpreter there.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the best, you know, way so that they have full access. We, you know, like on our set, we had interpreters all the time, and they weren't just interpreting what I was saying, you know, to the actor or what the actor was saying back to me, but they were also just interpreting things that were being said on set so that they could they could participate with the whole kind of atmosphere. So they were aware of, you know, what was happening and that, you know,
wow.
all that kind of stuff.
It's
you don't
cool.
you don't really
pretty
think
cool.
about that.
Yeah,
you just
yeah.
think, oh, they just need to know one-on-one. But it is about accommodating. Like, we get a wide experience. We can hear things far off.
Mm-hmm.
And we can kind of put together, like, what's happening, like, in the world. And they get less of those inputs.
Right.
They get the visual ones, but they don't get the auditory ones. And
right.
so we tried to kind of, you know, make it as accessible, accommodating
right.
as we could.
Now, let me ask you this. When do they seek, they obviously don't seek specifically deaf people, because in your family, she married a deaf person, right?
Yeah, a deaf
okay,
man, yeah.
a deaf man, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to accommodate, obviously. She had to understand how to deal with that, learn sign language and everything. So that's amazing. I mean, that's quite an accommodation to marry someone who you know you're going to have to make special case for, right?
Right.
For sure, yeah. And some do more and some do less. My sister
yeah.
happens to be fully fluent in American Sign Language. She had always had sort of an affinity for it.
Mm.
She had studied it in college, and that's kind of how they met. They met doing a play where she was sort of he was in the play, and she was in it too, but she was sort of one of the sort of like interpreter type parts, right?
Yeah.
She would speak, they would speak for the deaf people when they were signing, and then they would sign sometimes when other people were speaking. So there's always sign language and speaking happening, so both audiences could pick it up. Anyways, that's how they met. So it wasn't as big of a leap for her, but there are definitely people that marry people who are deaf and then don't learn sign language, or their kids don't learn sign language. I think it all just depends on
yeah.
I mean, it is, you're right, you said it's a challenge, you know, it's hard to learn another language. We're as hearing people, we sometimes are not that accommodating. We are the majority, you know what I mean? We have a little bit of that privilege, that hearing privilege. You know, they talk about like white privilege, but there is sort of like a full use of all your senses privilege,
absolutely.
You know, that's there. And so some families, I mean, that is one of the issues that can come up in like deaf culture, is people come from families that don't accommodate or don't really make it a point to really include, you know, people in various ways. So it can be a little bit of a struggle. Or for instance, you know, like, you know, maybe the spouse does learn sign language, but their whole family may not learn enough to be fully fluent. So these things are, you know, life is a little bit, you know, it has a lot of nuances, doesn't it? It really does.
What about like reading lips and stuff? I guess not everybody can, right?
That's true. Yeah. It's actually not very effective.
I didn't think so, no, you know? Just looking at the lips move, it's like, come on, man.
So many sounds look the same on our mouth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The difference is
it's
where
just
it gets placed.
It's in the movies it happens, right?
Yeah, yes. It's completely a false thing.
Yes.
Now, they can do it to some degree, especially if they have a little bit of residual, like their hearing aid helps them out and context helps them out, but they cannot read your lips across the room.
I can't read lips at all.
No.
The amount of times people try to, you know, be like on the low and like giving me information by like, I'm like, what?
I know. I cannot hear you. I have no idea what you're saying. No, I mean, if you ever want to just check it out, just watch a video of somebody talking, turn off the sound, and you will have no idea what they're saying.
Right. Yeah.
And they're only marginally better at it just because they have to be. But it's like really hard and not very effective. So yeah. I mean, if you really don't know sign language, you want to communicate with somebody, just write something down. Mm-hmm. They can read.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. So let's talk a little bit about the film specifically.
Sure.
I see... okay, so you have the young dancer and everything, right?
Yeah.
Now, tell us the story briefly, really.
Yeah, it's about a young dancer, Alex, who's kind of struggling at her dance school. And when she meets this young drummer, it kind of brings up her sort of conflicted feelings about being sort of bicultural, about being the only hearing person, you know, in her all deaf family. And so she's, you know, she's just sort of struggling, you know, like a little bit where she fits in. It's a little bit what she's struggling with in her dance, and it's a little bit what she's struggling in her life.
Right. So she has deaf people all around her, both her parents, right?
Both her parents and her brother. Yeah.
Right. And a brother too.
Yeah, it's a little brother and they're, yeah.
Wow. But that's not like hereditary, is it? I mean, hearing loss or it's
some
not
of both.
Loss. Yeah.
There are hereditary reasons. And then a lot of times people have an illness or something like that, that they lose their hearing, you know, like meningitis is kind of one of the main ways people do, but they'll get, so sometimes it'll be hereditary and it'll run in a family. And then sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. As the story shows.
Yeah.
Wow. So so she's struggling with that. Now, what was she struggling with at the dance school?
Yeah, she's kind of just struggling with expression, you know, like really showing who she is. Mm-hmm. Her dance instructor is just, you know, is just sort of telling her that she's really not really showing who she is. But it's a little bit because Alex doesn't really exactly know who she is. She's just trying to sort of copy what's out there to some degree. And so that's what she's kind of struggling with. She's just her sense of, you know, fitting in, like what is her artistic expression, also what is her, you know, like where is she going to fit,
right?
You know, is she going to be more deaf, is she going to be more hearing, you know? Wow. And what combination of that is she going to live her life?
Yeah. So she's got this one option to live what, like a deaf person? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, she speaks sign language fluently. She's familiar with the cultural things, and so she definitely can
choose
she could not, you know, and she does at one point. There's a moment in there where someone kind of mistakes her for being deaf, and she just sort of lets that happen. And then it comes up and catches her later.
Wow.
Yeah,
so now you wrote the story too, right?
I did, yeah.
Wow, very inspiring.
Yeah, thank you.
How long did it take you to put the story together? Not the film, but writing.
Sure.
It.
Well, I mean, I've been sort of thinking about it for a bunch of years, but when I really started writing, it took me, I don't know, it took me a couple weeks to kind of write the first draft, and then And then I took the next probably 6 months to kind of revise it. We also had some classes at USC that we have to take with our thesis, which this was my thesis, where they kind of revise it with you and things like that. So about 6 months, but that it's kind of normal to write it and then have to rewrite quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
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 But at least you get something in the end, and that's pretty rewarding, right?
It is. No. It's worth it. I definitely like to, I mean, I just like stories. I like all kinds of stories. I'm a huge consumer of stories, and I like to put out stories that I think, or perspectives that haven't been seen too much, and also that reflect, you know, this one reflects somewhat my family. You know what I mean? I have a deaf brother-in-law. He actually plays the dad in this. That is my brother-in-law.
Oh. That's cool.
The father,
right?
Yeah.
Nepotism there.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, but he's a well-known actor. His name's CJ Jones. He was in Baby Driver. He's working on Avatar, these new sequels now.
Cool.
So I lucked out with that one. But anyways, and you know, and like I said, my nephew who also is in it, he actually he just is in it briefly. He plays like the younger brother, you know, the older brother, actually, when he's young. Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
So, you know, you put in who you can, but it's a very small little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many in the cast altogether? You had several people there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had a big cast. I'm not actually
really?
Sure how many.
How were you able to get so many people? I mean, on a.
Yeah. Well, we asked for partially. Okay. So, well, all the deaf people, I mean, there's three main deaf characters, right? The two parents and Josh, who's kind
right,
of the
brother.
The love interest drummer.
Oh,
for Alex,
okay,
yeah,
right,
the brother
right.
is a very
small
part.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Those are the three, and those, you know, we got because, like I said, my brother-in-law has been in the deaf acting community, and so has my sister, who was one of my producers on this. So she actually reached out to people personally and asked them to audition for us. We also got Ryan Lane. He was on the TV show Switched at Birth. He was a series regular on that for a few seasons.
Right.
And so he came in and auditioned for us. And so the deaf community actually was what some people thought would be the harder part, but we knew the best actors out there and that this was an interesting story and that they would probably be interested in. And they were, and we had a lot of great people audition for us.
Yeah.
So that was that. We had 16 dancers, you know, work for us. And that all came about because of our choreographer.
Oh.
So Tice DiOrio is our choreographer. He's also.
Why so many dancers like to be in the dance school or
dance
something?
Dance school and also in the final performance.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
The performance is quite spectacular at the
really?
End. Yeah. Tice DiOrio is a choreographer who's done things on So You Think You Can Dance. He's been one of their choreographers. And he's also currently Taylor Swift's choreographer.
Oh.
So,
whoa.
Yeah. So it was really. So he brought in all these amazing dancers. It actually kind of bumped up in number because he wanted them. Like we were having maybe more like 10, but he just kept adding people. And we're like, that's all right.
Yeah, exactly. More authentic than anything, you know?
Yeah. And they were amazing. And so, I mean, cast wise, I don't know. I think there's about, if you count all the dancers and stuff, there's about, you know, 25 or so. And then there's about 25 crew and things.
And you had to direct all of them.
Yeah. We had some big days. We had some days there were a lot of people on set.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, we definitely did. We had.
So that was a handful for you, right? As the director.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Now, who, did someone help you produce the film? I mean, how did you get it all done?
Yeah, I had three producers, Cassandra Jones and Lori Gardner and Javon Wetter. And Cassandra's my sister, so that was easy. And but she really handled all the she got the interpreters and all that kind of stuff. Like she really handled all that. Lori was a USC colleague of mine, so she kind of helped handle all the USC kind of paperwork and things like that. And then Javon is a deaf producer, so he kind of helped us also with sort of like you know, making sure that we were honoring all the kind, you know, all the deaf community could be proud of it, and that we weren't stepping over a line or anything like that. Yeah.
So you see, and it helps to have good family, right? I mean, look, she's utilizing everybody
she
knows.
It does, man. Yeah.
Family business.
Yeah. Well, you need to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was sort of funny because I wrote this for CJ before Baby Driver came out, but, you know, then it comes out and he's in it and, you know.
I saw the movie. What did he do in the film?
He plays Joseph, the father figure for Baby, you know, the guy who's in the wheelchair.
I don't remember that. Yeah, I don't remember that part. I usually don't remember much of movies anyway. So, but now
you just
I'll watch
the action.
It. Now I'll watch it again. Yeah. It was actually a pretty cool movie, you know.
It was a fun movie.
At first, I didn't know what to expect when it said Baby Driver, you know. But then it's pretty nice action film. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
No, it's
so now
cool.
I'll have to add it to my queue.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Edgar Wright's a great director, so it's worth watching.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated by Coda. I mean, I'd like to see it. So do they eventually, I mean, do they have sections on Netflix and Prime where they have short films and stuff?
They do. I'm not sure. Well, we're still kind of in the festival circuit right now. We'll probably
so
be
it's
there.
Too soon for that.
Yeah, we'll probably be there, I don't know, for maybe another 6 months to a year or something like that. Perhaps it kind of, as it makes its way around. But they do make deals, yeah, Vimeo has some, Amazon Prime has some. Sometimes things go on to HBO. Sometimes things go on to Netflix. There are these ways to like that they can be out to the wider public, and we certainly hope that there's a way for anybody to see it.
Yeah, and you know, you're shining a big light on a certain community, certain culture, and you know, that's commendable, I think, and people would like, because, you know, on a daily basis, you don't think of deaf people, you know, I mean,
sure.
Unless you run into one. So you made it, you brought it into front and center so people can see what the situation, what the condition is being a deaf person and how you get along.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Very nice, you know, I mean, very inspiring, I think. First I was going to tell you that if you were sent by Catherine, you're a good candidate for an Oscar, because almost all her clients end up in the Oscars, you know, nominees and stuff. So you're in good company, you know.
Yeah,
but your film is definitely worth taking a look at, because, you know, and we saw the trailer and everything. We didn't spend the 20 minutes, but I do have access. I'll send it to you. Maybe we can watch it, you know?
Yeah, it's fun, and people really enjoy it. It's like it ends in a nice, uplifting way. So.
Really?
Yeah. So,
oh, that's good. So it's not a depressing film.
It's not depressing. It is dramatic, but not depressing.
Yeah, some people make depressing movies. I don't know why.
No, I think this is I always wanted to make a film, and this particular type of film, where, you know, you see people go through some things, but ultimately it's about, you know, that triumph of spirit, and also the fact that, I mean, I actually made particular choices to not, to show that, you know, deaf people, you know, in multiple ways. Like, Josh is a very, he's the guy who plays he's the drummer. He's very downbeaten or anything like that. He has way more confidence than Alex does. Yeah. She's still struggling. He knows who he is. He's a deaf man. He's very, you know, proud to be who he is.
Right.
She's the one who's like struggling with, you know, and I don't think we see as many of those types of stories. We see somebody, they have some sort of disability or something, and it's always about overcoming the disability or that kind of thing. And this isn't. This is just about people who have, you know, this particular disability, which is deafness, and then they just live their life. It's just about life, right? It's just about family and identity and who you are and who you want to be and all that kind
God,
of stuff.
God, and it's so awful, you know? I mean, I love music so much. I don't know how I could deal with deafness. I mean, I guess you just have to accept it, you
know? I think when you watch the film, you see that it's not so black and white. I mean,
I mean, the drummer and everything.
He's a drummer. You know, things,
exactly.
You know.
Look at Beethoven.
Yeah, exactly. It depends how, for one thing, it depends on how deaf you are. There's gradations, right? You know, some people can't hear at all, but most people have some hearing. It's just not good enough to understand speech or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So gradations, but they can feel, you know, sound is vibration. They feel vibration. Most deaf people really love music. It's kind of a, it's a, like a, a misnomer almost, you know, that kind of thing. It's just not quite a lot. Really, really enjoy it. Yeah, they might crank up the bass kind of louder than you want it, or, you know, or just the whole volume is louder than somebody with stronger hearing would want to listen to.
Right.
But,
right. But unless they're listening to Bette Midler where there's no beat at all, you wouldn't even know it's playing. There's nothing there. But no, that's true. I'm just trying to think of what hearing loss must feel like. You know what I'm saying?
Sure,
it's sure. Really, and you know, this is not to bring you down, but a very close relative. Well, my ex's niece, okay, got hurt in an accident, and they crushed her legs. She wasn't even in the car. She was unloading groceries from her car.
Oh my God!
In front of her house, this guy came, pinned her between the two cars, and yesterday she had to have one leg amputated, you know, under the knee. And what I'm saying is, there's a life changer, you know. Then suddenly it's like you have to accept it. There's no other way. You know, whatever you have to accept it. And I would imagine with deaf people, it's the same way. It's like you can try and fight it, but that's a condition that you're in.
And I don't
that's
think,
your situation.
I don't think
right?
they do fight it for the most part, because most of them were either born or had this happen when they were young. So right. obviously, you know, they
don't know any different. Is that what you're
to
saying?
To some degree, yeah. I mean, it is just like you said, it is who you are, but it is not a loss to them. I don't know.
But you did say some people suffer from loss later on in life, right?
Some
people
do,
that have
old,
heard.
Older people usually and things like that. But okay. most of the, I mean, obviously there's a multitude of ways.
Right,
but
like
a lot of people that would identify themselves as deaf in the deaf culture, you know, this it happened at some point when they were young or they were born like that for the most part.
Right.
Like, you know, so my point is, I think, you know, some people, I've even heard them say, you know, I wouldn't want to hear, because who they are is somebody who doesn't hear. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that
yeah.
is part of their identity.
That's
which
who
is,
they are.
Which is why we sort of explored identity in CODA. It's like who they are. Mm. If they heard, they would be someone different, and they don't want to be someone different. They want to be who they are.
Right.
Do you know? So right. your niece or whatever, she's having a different experience because yeah. she is losing a part of who she thought she was.
I see. Okay.
And she has to adjust.
Right.
And I'm sure there are people who lose their hearing and similar. But I really do think that majority of people who identify themselves as deaf, as in deaf community, don't see it as a loss. Just see that as I am. Just like I might be, you know,
right.
Just like I might be Israeli in culture or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, whatever it is, I might be Jewish. I might be this. It's just like, it's not really choices. It's just like something that
that's who
is.
You are. Like yeah. me, I'm Israeli, and that's it. You know,
that's
I don't
it.
Know how you picked that out of all places, but it sounds pretty good, you know?
Well, you also have to think maybe it heightens other senses. Like, I mean, they say what the body language is like 90% of communication. You know, maybe they
it,
pick
oh, it
up
does.
On body language
yeah.
so much more
my
than we do.
My brother-in-law drives so crazy, but his visual perception is way better than ours. But I'm like always scared when he's driving, but he doesn't crash.
Yeah, right?
No, because he can just see, I don't know, sees it differently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. They just have a different, their visual acuity is better, or,
yeah.
you know, other kinds of things. Smell. He smells things you don't smell.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, you. So what you're trying to say, like for example, when they grow up, and that's the norm to them, right? I mean,
yeah.
not being able to hear, you know, it's just like us. You know, we don't miss maybe seeing behind us because we don't have eyes behind us, and we never will, you know.
Right.
So that's the situation. But what if there's an alien with eyes in the back, you know?
Yeah, then
well,
we're missing.
Right?
Then
well,
we're missing out.
We won't find out until we storm Area 51 in like what a month.
then we'll definitely feel like we're missing something.
Yeah,
yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Well,
funny. Yeah.
So the film is CODA. Tell us again what it stands for.
Child of deaf adults or children of deaf adults.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's a culture in itself, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they actually have, you know, they have these CODA camps and they have kind of these meetings and things that they do and try to bring them together because it's a very specific way to grow up, you know?
Yeah.
It's a very unusual way to grow up, you know?
Now, do you find that sometimes you are in the middle, like you're the ears for your parents? I mean, is that like a heavy responsibility for a child?
I think especially for kids that have both parents that are deaf, and especially if both parents are really profoundly deaf, so that they have less, it's even harder for them to interact with the hearing, you know, community. I think some deaf people, their hearing aids and things like that make it so, and their hearing loss might not be as deep, so they can interact a little bit more.
Okay.
So I think, but I think for the profoundly deaf parents, if they have those, that yes, we even have, you know, we have a moment in the film where, you know, our little, it's like a flashback, and our little Alex hears the door and her parents don't. And she goes to open it, you know, and she's like five or whatever.
Right.
So there are these things where it could be, one, potentially dangerous. Also, yes, she's the one that people interact through. So you're telling this five-year-old, people are talking to her
to
talk to the parent, right? So they get sort of, I heard once, this is not in the film, but this was a story that when we were interviewing some CODAs, you know, and he was kind of older. He's like more like a teenager, but his father or somebody was in the hospital, and he was the one who had to kind of interpret for his parent this very scary situation. You know, he's the child with his father having, I think, a heart attack or something, and he's the one the doctor's talking to, and then he's having to explain to his dad, and back and forth and back and forth. That's a lot of pressure to put on somebody who just wants to be, they're the child, they're the one with scared for their parent and things like that. They're not just the straight interpreter, they also have like an emotional connection. And so I do think that happens a fair amount.
Yeah.
And it's quite the responsibility for a child, I would think.
Yeah,
you know?
I do think. Yeah.
Yeah, heavy weight on their shoulder to have to be
the
ears, and mouths for the parents. But so that's why there's a term, CODA. I mean, it's a certain culture.
It's a certain culture. It's a certain way of growing up. It's, you know, it's unique to them. You know, they have certain they have certain things that are uncommon, but they have certain things. Like I said, we interviewed a bunch and they kind of told us similar type stories, and they told us similar type feelings and things like that. So they definitely have a somewhat of a shared experience. And we wanted to kind of give a flavor of that in our film.
Well, amazing. Erica Davis Marsh, the film is CODA. And you can see it if you go join the festival circuit or look for it later. I know we have private screening on Vimeo, but you guys don't. So,
but they can follow us. We're at CODA Movie USC on any social media. So we have about five festivals so far that we're in the fall. So if people want to just, you know, or tap us, like I said, we're at CODA Movie USC, and follow us. And then when it gets to a wider release, we'll let people know where it's going to be.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Well, congratulations, Erica. I think you've done a tremendous job here, not just in filmmaking, but also in bringing to light this total community. It's probably pretty large still, you know, of people that we don't think about being deaf every day of our lives, but there are children that's what they have to deal with every day. That they have deaf parents, and that's the reality for them, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sometimes a burden, but sometimes a real joy, just like every parent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us, Erica.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Very inspiring to me.
Yeah.
You see, I told you the show is going to make me feel good today. We, you know, that's one thing about the show I like, Katie, is that we always meet great people here, you know,
yeah.
Amazing people. And everybody, you don't have to be like an A-list celebrity to have an interesting story, you know.
Usually
and to
it's
show,
the opposite.
Exactly, you know. So leave the Jimmy Kimmel and all yeah. these places for A-list celebrities. We prefer the interesting ones.
Yeah, people and who actually are, you know, struggling and going through it. That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, so yeah. we wish you continued success in the film. Come back, tell us when you have new films. Do you have anything like in the new future that you're working on?
Well, I'm writing a feature version of Coda.
Oh.
And then I'm working on another short, which is sort of set in a it's about a woman superhero in kind of an she kind of works for an office, you know, like an organization, right? So it's a little bit about office politics as a superhero.
Oh, well. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Katie, thank you also for joining
Thanks for having me.
It was even a pleasure wiping all the water you spilled on the floor.
I'm so sorry about that.
But that's okay.
I'm trying to drink a gallon of water a day, guys, because of kidney infection. So Sam was nice enough to be my janitorial.
Yeah, exactly. She's got this huge water bottle. I mean, you could fill a gas tank of a car gas tank with this, yeah. you know? What is it, like a quart?
It's a gallon.
A gallon.
Yeah.
Wow. Like the gallon milk that you buy, right?
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well, that's too much water for me. I could drown in that. Well, Katie, thank you for joining us too.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.